On the football field, the action happens in the blink of an eye. It's like that off the field too when you've been injured. In a split second, your life is changed. Whether on the field or in the courtroom, when you've been injured, you need the right teammates by your side. You need Chase and Boscolo, a law firm willing to protect and fight for your rights. On the football field or in the courtroom, having the right team determines whether you win or lose. When injuries change your life, call Chase and Boscolo, trial lawyers that care.
Oarsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Oarsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Oarsman story.
Oarsman Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Let's ride together.
This is CSN's Redskins Talk. Here is your host, JP Finley.
What's up, everybody? JP Finley here, Redskins Talk Podcast, coming your way right now. I am joined by Rich Tandler. Tandler, what's up, dude?
Hey, doing great.
Tandler got the week off last week to allow our friend Dan Steinberg to come in. We appreciated Steins' time. We had fun talking about cereal and Bush Light and Kirk Cousins. Tandler is back now, and I kind of want to jump right into something, Tandler, so bear with me. I wrote about the Redskins and analytics. It was based on an Albert Breer story in MMQB about what teams use analytics, what teams don't, what teams use a lot of it, what teams use a little, etc. And the Skins, to me, unsurprisingly, aren't big on analytics, though they're kind of trending that way. Bruce Allen is at least interested in kind of checking into more resources. And Tandler, I don't know that you and I don't even know if we like texted about that, but I was curious kind of your thoughts as somebody, I know you're a big baseball guy and just somebody who's probably seen the rise of analytics in sports and in football.
Yeah, well, analytics don't apply as much in football as they do in baseball simply because 162 games versus 16 for football. And just players, in baseball, everybody has at-bats that you can analyze.
Right.
Obviously, if you have pitches to analyze, how do you analyze an offensive lineman? How do you analyze a defensive lineman?
Right.
But that said, I don't think you can have too much information, to make decisions, whether it's on players, whether it's, what to call against this particular team on 3rd and 8 in the third quarter, and things like that. So I think, if you have information, now using analytics for draft picks like the Browns seem to be doing, that I'm very dubious on that.
Well, I think they're more doing the try to acquire more picks. I mean, which isn't that different from what Scott McLuhan always talked about, was you wanted as many chances to hit on guys as you could get.
Yeah, well, I would echo, that philosophy goes back. That's nothing new in the analytics era. I mean, obviously, the more draft picks you have, the more chances you have on hitting on a guy.
Right. Well, and there is, when something has a fancy new name, it often becomes a hotter topic. But I think coaches have been looking. One thing I do think football maybe is ahead of the curve is film study and trying to figure out situations. Okay, on 3rd and less than 5, this team is known to bring a corner blitz. On 3rd and more than 5, this team is known to sit in a soft zone. I mean, and the NFL has been doing that kind of stuff for decades.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, I thought that was fun. I thought it was interesting anyway. As far as the Skins not overly investing in analytics, this is a team that historically hasn't even been among the heaviest in the NFL and just scouting staff. So I don't think fans should be surprised that they haven't gone heavy into adding new staff directly for analytics. I just don't see that happening.
No.
I mean, they run...
Not anytime soon.
Right. They run one of the more lean organizations, I believe, around the league. All right. So, a couple more things on my list here, Taylor. We are getting close to Richmond. I think we are 3 weeks out, maybe less.
3 weeks from right now, we'll be watching the first real practice.
That will be fun. I am looking forward to it. I think there's a lot to look forward to. So, I wanted to give you... My one thing I'm excited to watch in Richmond, and one thing I'm kind of already, I don't want to say dreading, but not looking forward to. Before I give mine, you go first. Or what do you want to do? Should we do one thing we're both looking forward to, and then one thing we're both not looking forward to? How do you want to do this?
Yeah. Let's alternate here.
All right. So you go first. What is one thing you are looking forward to?
It's a toss out because they go on between the same time. You have to choose between the two. Is the linemen going one on one against each other?
Dude, you stole mine.
And the then I will go with the one on one coverage that they're doing while that's going on.
You're saying the corners and the receivers?
The corners, right? The corners and the receivers going at each other. And I think that gets a little more. A little more trash talking, a little more personal. Neither one of them really accurately represent the game situation, but it's I enjoy watching it.
Okay, I agree. I actually don't agree with you there, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the things I'm looking forward to the most, I was gonna say the defensive and offensive linemen one on ones. I think truly. In training camp, those are the best actual battles you see that are a direct reflection of what you see on game day. And I'll get to specifically what that means with the wide receivers and the corners and my things I don't like. But I cannot wait to watch Jonathan Allen go against Brandon Scherff, for talking sake. I think...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, don't mistake that for a game situation. I mean, there's no double team coming. Nobody's pulling.
I get that, but ultimately,
often
you're engaged with the linemen across from you, and that's as close to game situations as you get in training camp. I mean, the other thing that I'm really looking forward to is they often run that 2 minute drill, which is so much fun because especially Kirk, but the whole offense gets really into it, and the defense gets so rowdy if they make a stop or get a turnover or any of that, and that's always fun. I think that's the stuff fans enjoy the most, when it's real 11-on-11 running that 2 minute drill, usually to close out the afternoon practice.
Yeah, I'm in on that, no doubt.
All right, well, I'm going to go directly to my one thing I don't like, and it's one thing you like. So the wide receiver cornerback battles are the most overhyped. I take a step back. They're really fun to watch, right? I mean, it's awesome. You're seeing, last year, Deshaun versus Norman was all anybody wanted to see, or Pierre versus Breland. And those matchups are really fun to watch. But the reaction that comes from videos, you and I will tweet out a video, Jamison Crowder, made Kendall Fuller fall down, for talking sake, whatever. The reaction that comes from that is so over-amplified compared to what that drill is. That drill is inherently impossible for cornerbacks. There's no safety help. There's no pressure on the quarterback. There's nothing underneath with linebackers. There's no out of bounds typically. I mean, most of those drills are run in the middle of the field, and these guys.
Well, it's as realistic as the one-on-one.
No, it's
yes,
not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. Because
yes, it is.
Because ultimately, in the trenches, on the line, you have to seven times out of ten, you have to beat the guy in front of you. And that's what that drill is.
Well, if you're running a pass pattern, assume it's man-to-man coverage.
But there's usually still safety help.
It's man blocking and not zone blocking.
No, because there's usually still safety help. There's still defensive line getting to the quarterback, getting their hands up, tipping a pass. You cannot tell me.
There's double teams. There's a quarterback scrambling. I don't see a big difference.
You honestly think.
I think they're both entertaining.
You honestly think
that's realistic.
You honestly think corners versus wide receivers one-on-one with just the quarterback throwing to them is more realistic to what happens in a game than offensive linemen squaring off with defensive linemen?
as.
No.
I'd say they're equal.
Less. 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 That'll be a good question for players when we get down there. I will wager a soda that I'm correct.
Okay, you're on.
All right. Well, I kind of forget what was up now. Have you said what you don't like down there?
No.
All right, you're
special up. Special teams drills.
Oh, it's so
talk
boring.
About non-game situations. Special teams drills are the most boring thing going on down there.
Agreed, agreed. You know what, fans? I'm going to give you a little tip right now. The special teams only practice that they have, I don't know what day that is, Taylor, but that's one you can stay home that day.
Yep.
Although, one thing I like during special teams drills is, you know, NFL teams are filming everything. So they're filming all their practices. And typically the crane is, there's one set up behind the field goal post. Isn't there, Taylor, above all the tents? And
I think so. Yes.
I swear Dustin Hopkins hits that thing all the time. One other thing I like is, so there's all the tents, you know, CSN has a tent and Larry Michael, Redskins Nation has a tent. I think Channel 4 has a tent, maybe some of the Richmond stations. There's plenty of tents down there, and you constantly just get bombarded with footballs on the roof of the tent. It sounds like you're under attack, which is kind of entertaining. And I've been known to jump up like a scared little mouse.
Kind of like when the cannons go off in Tampa.
Exactly like that. I stand by that you didn't hear it, and that's the only reason you didn't move.
Carry on.
All right, what are the other fun things that I'm looking forward to in Richmond? It's cool just to, like, watch these guys go through drills. I think running back drills are the most fun to watch. It's all the high knees and running through the tackling dummies and all that stuff. The hardest one that I think those guys do is the one where they have to run super low. You know the one I'm talking about? Where it's like they have to get underneath like a 5-foot barrier and do like a 6-yard
burst. Whatever it is.
Yeah, that looks hard.
Yeah, I like hitting the sled as far as the individuals go. I like that. I like that sound.
Yeah, I like the sled is always fun. I hit the sled once last year. I don't know that I'll be doing that again this year. We'll see. It's also fun the first couple days where they're just blaring music and there's just that excitement to be back out there. I enjoy, you know. But after a week of camp, that monotony kind of sets in, and that Richmond heat usually sets in. What is one restaurant you're looking forward to going back to?
I like Pasture.
Me too. That's actually the one I was going to say.
Yeah.
Good. That place
good
is good
stuff there.
Yeah.
And they take. I've never had a bad meal or even mediocre service. Service there is always excellent.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. So there was another thing I wanted to get to. I did my prediction for the top 5 touchdown scorers on the Redskins. I think you've seen that, Tandler, but I will give you my top 5. And a lot of this is based on last year and kind of how I expect the offense to flow this year. At number 5, I have Chris Thompson. Thompson scored 5 times last year. I think his role will actually increase this year, and I think he can get in the end zone another 5-6 times. How do you want to do this? You want to go back and forth, 5-4-3-2-1, or you want me to give my list and then you give yours?
Go ahead and give your list.
Okay. All right, so 5, I have Thompson. 4, I have Terrell Pryor. And so a lot of folks on Facebook and Twitter and stuff have been saying that I am too low on Pryor, that he's going to score more. But I certainly think he can, but consider DeSean and Pierre combined last year for 7 touchdowns. I think Pryor is going to be a much better red zone weapon for them, and I wrote about this and got into it with some folks on Twitter about it. I think Pryor is a much better and different weapon in the red zone for the Redskins, but I mean, is he going to get to 6 touchdowns? That's going to be interesting to see. Number 3, I have Rob Kelly. He had 7 TDs last year and basically only played the second half of the season. Even if he loses carries around the goal line, which I think could happen, I still see him getting 7 or 8 touchdowns. Number two is Jamison Crowder. He actually led the team in touchdowns last year. I think he's going to have a really big year. I think he's going to have a 1,000-yard season. I like Crowder a lot. The only reason he's not number one is because the guy at number one is Jordan Reed, who is just so damn good. He looked great the brief time we saw him at minicamp. The only thing that keeps Jordan Reed from leading the Redskins in touchdowns is injuries. When I saw him in minicamp, though, he looked like he had trimmed down a little bit. And, you know, I just think if he's in really great shape, that should help his health. Say he gets 12, 13 starts, I think he runs away with a touchdown total.
Yeah, I would agree with that. In fact, okay, our top two are the same. I got Crowder two, Reed one. So okay. All right. The others, we got some different dudes.
And when I did this on TV with Carlin, he had Crowder one and Reed two, and I wouldn't argue that point, really. And I think the only reason you don't put Reed up is injury concerns, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He'll be the main target. And but Crowder can Crowder can score from anywhere.
Yep.
Reed's really red zone. Okay, I've got Rob Kelly number five because number four I have Samaje Perine.
Oh, boy.
I think Perine is going to be...
Hold on, who was your number five?
Kelly.
Okay.
Because Samaje Perine is going to be a touchdown vulture.
All right.
He will get a lot of short yardage goal line situations after Kelly and the passing game get him close. And three, I don't have Pryor on here at all. I have Josh Doctson. Just picturing and seeing him at TCU, and yes, that's college. It is a different thing, but jumping up, grabbing passes, just really high, incredible ability to high point the ball. I think that he will, that Kirk Cousins will, maybe not immediately at the beginning of the season, but before we get too deep in the season, we'll start to go to him and find him to be a very good red zone target. So I think he'll be third, and then Crowder and Reed 2-1.
All right, so your top five is Kelly, Perine, Doctson, Crowder, Reed. So you don't have Chris Thompson or Terrell Pryor on there.
No, Thompson can be caught. Pryor, I don't want to say I'm down on Pryor, but I want to see him a little bit more. And of course, having Doctson up there, that might sound kind of inconsistent.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, Pryor produced last year on a terrible team.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. But I don't know. Four or five touchdowns? Of course, the team didn't score that many. So I don't know. I think Doctson will just become that favorite target. And, Pryor, I think, will Pryor's touchdowns will suffer some because of that.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know what's crazy, and clearly this is going to change. I think you and I would both be shocked if this didn't change. But Doctson wasn't even running with the ones in minicamp. I mean, Ryan Grant was out there, and we know the staff loves Ryan Grant. Now, again, I fully expect Josh Doctson to start week one, but it's interesting that that's there.
And the old, right, and that undrafted rookie, whatever his name is, was the one that knows tackle. I mean,
I don't think you can compare the two at all.
Yeah, they are compared because it's irrelevant.
No, it's Taylor, irrelevant. You had 10 players that are going to be in the starting lineup. I mean, you don't think that was done purposely to have Ryan Grant out there instead of Josh Doctson? Jim Tom Sula specifically said, we don't have a depth chart. We don't know what we've got until these guys start hitting. And you would look out there, and the defensive line would be some combination of Ziggy Hood. I mean, it was just all over the place, consistently. Whereas the offensive starting 11 would be the exact starting lineup you expect, except Ryan Grant instead of Josh Doctson, every day. So I think that's different to try to compare.
Okay. Well, if you want to put some stock in that, feel free.
I just said I expect Doctson to start week one, but I don't think, man, this staff loves Ryan Grant. I know people go crazy, but they do.
Well, not to the point where they're going to start him up with the number one draft pick from a year ago.
I agree, but all right, man. Your cold water Tandler is in full effect.
It's what I do.
It sure is. So, all right, I got a good Twitter question. Who's this from? At 34 Mark G, Mark Gergens. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, Mark. Do you think the Skins should sign Pryor long-term before he has a huge year and prices out of the market? I'm going to answer this one because they couldn't sign him long-term, Mark. Clearly, he wanted a short-term deal so he can get paid like he thinks he's worth. Otherwise, I'm guessing there were 3-4 year deals offered to him, but they just weren't the money he thinks he's worth. So I think that's why Pryor is here on a 1 year deal. Your thoughts, Rich?
Let's hold the bus on all world Terrell Pryor here. I mean, let's see, let's wait till he catches a pass. Maybe, maybe if he's doing well at midseason, maybe try to work something out, but not now. And exactly what you said. I don't think, if the Redskins did want to sign it for a longer term, he clearly is willing to gamble on himself, as did Kirk Cousins, and it's paying off for Kirk Cousins. So maybe Pryor's thinking the same thing.
So I just had to have this debate, and I agree with you, that will Terrell Pryor be a 1,000-yard receiver? I think he will be. Just the way this offense goes, I did a thing. Kirk Cousins has never, or with Jay Gruden as head coach, the Redskins have thrown the ball at least 547 times every year. Last year, Kirk threw the ball more than 600 times. I see that dipping a little bit with Jay calling the plays instead of McVay again. But even if it dips, I think it dips to like 580, something like that. I think Pryor will see less targets. He saw an absurd 140 targets last year on an awful Browns team. I think he sees around 100 targets this year, but I think the opportunities will be much better than he was getting in Cleveland. So I see him getting over the 1,000-yard mark. What about you, Taylor?
So I don't know. Do you see Crowder and Pryor both going over 1,000 yards?
I do. I mean, consider... Well,
then they're going to have to pass more. I mean, Garcon and Jackson just barely went over 1,000 last year.
Right, and Crowder had 850.
I think.
And Crowder had 850.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know where... If they're going to run the ball a little bit more, pass a little bit less, I don't know where the yards are going to come from.
20 less throws over a 16-game season is nothing.
That's not significant.
Right.
You're right. 20 throws fewer again. That would not be a significant change.
That right.
If they're going to run more and significantly change, they would drop to more like 520 passes or something, 530.
That'd be less than any Redskins quarterback has ever thrown under Gruden. I wrote it down earlier. It was like 547, 560, 600.
He would have to change his philosophy.
Which I don't expect to happen.
I don't know. Did he have 2,000-yard receivers in 2014? Of course not. He had the circuit, three-ring circuit of the quarterback.
Right, no chance.
Did they, in Cousins' first year as a starter? They have any.
In 15? Well, Deshaun was hurt half the year, too.
Well, then somebody else should have been. They threw the ball.
All right, but I don't even know what we're...
It's not an automatic that you have 2,000-yard receivers in this offense.
I certainly agree with that, but it happened last... So here's my counter to that. You had two 1,000-yard receivers last year, and Crowder still got to 850. So... To me, you're filling some of that void with Pryor, and then Crowder gets to 1,000. It's still three guys I don't believe will add up to – three receivers I don't think will add up to that same, call it 1,900 yards. Like, I don't think – or I'm sorry, 2,900 yards, rather. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because to me, Doxson's going to get 650 yards. I just think he's a rookie wideout, ultimately, and generally, those guys aren't killing it on levels we've seen in the past. I mean, I think last year Michael Thomas went nuts for the Saints, but he was their number one receiver. I think, you know, what did
Brandon Cooks was really the number one receiver.
I mean, if you look, I think what's the kid's name? Shepard. What Shepard, I think, had, I'm going to look it up so I don't make up a number, but if you think about, typically, I think if Josh Doctson gets to 650, 700, this team should be pretty happy. Yeah, I mean, Sterling Shepard had 680 yards last year. Tyreek Hill had 593. I think Michael Thomas had 1,100 yards for the Saints, but he emerged as their top playmaker.
Well, that's the Saints. I mean, you know, they're, right. you can throw their numbers. You know, right. Drew Brees throws for 5,000 every year. So,
but hell, Kirk threw for 4,900. You know,
right?
I think you're looking at Pryor, Crowder, Doctson amassing something along the lines of 2,700-2,800 yards, and that breakdown for me is Crowder and Pryor each get past 1,000, and then Doctson makes up the rest.
I don't think they both do.
Well, how about, do you see the total being different?
Yeah, I think the total will be lower.
So you got it at like 2,500 between.
I think they're going to run the ball. I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more.
All right, that'll be interesting to watch. All right, Taylor, we got to run. We have a tight schedule today. We are we're actually doing some planning for Richmond with all the other folks that run the CSN Redskins stuff and Instagram. There's going to be a lot of really cool social media stuff going on down in Richmond from all our CSN accounts that hopefully people enjoy. So, Taylor, any last words from you besides yelling at me all the time?
No, we just continue yelling. You know, just maybe figure out, maybe you can be right someday. Who knows?
Someday, except most days. All right, man. Good to talk to you. And we will be back next week, folks. Maybe we'll have a surprise guest for you. Maybe we won't. But as always, if you've made it this far, I owe you a beer. Take care.
I owe you a beer.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Chantilly Kia. Let's ride together.
Orsman opened its first car dealership in 1921. Now, over 100 years and many dealerships later, Orsman of Virginia can proudly say that when it comes to your car buying needs, if you want it, we've got it. Saving, selection, and service? Check. Lifetime engine guarantees and car washes? Check. Loaner cars and free Virginia inspections? Check and check. See, over the past 100 years, we've learned that to succeed in business, we've got to keep our customers happy. And that's the Orsman story.
Orsman Fairfax Toyota. Let's ride together.